lights. So what do you think, Matt? Should we jump into the John Stewart stuff? What do you think, buddy?
I think we probably should.
Okay. It's been such a easygoing night with no contention. What's the matter? You look like something's up. Everything okay? Folks, if you could hope, if you could only see what I'm looking at through this window, what's going on?
I'm going to let George Carlin speak for me here.
Okay.
Well, if I can find him. Where did he disappear to?
He's a good
man. Look at it this way. Think of how stupid the average person is, and then realize half of them are stupider than that.
Amen, George. Amen.
Is this an engagement with a texter that you're shaking your head over?
No, I just think it's comical how no matter where we start out, we end up in the same place. And I'm wondering if that's a metaphor for the way the world is just going to be for quite a while.
How do you mean? The show itself tonight or in general how we speak
just
to each other?
Just in general how we speak in society.
Okay.
It's not a show-specific thing. It's more just the repetition where no matter where you start, you end up wrapping around to the same basic place. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight, losing my religion.
Using long division. I always want to do that song. Using long division, trying to divide six from two. Oh no, Bob, that was a horrible idea. I just thought it was just a great rhyme. Using long division, you know. Anyway. So this is what I want to talk about this break, if I may, if you'll indulge me. We've been there's a lot of issues in the world that we're dealing with, and I think it's great that we can have conversations about them, whether it's politics, whether it's gun violence, whether it's whatever, you know, what our kids are taught in our schools. The topic of anti-Semitism has been around forever, and it's gotten more and more traction these days because of Kanye West's recent, troubles. The stuff that he's gotten himself hooked up in, some of the statements he's made, some of the consequences of the statements he's made, Kyrie Irving in the same boat. And last night, one of the great minds of our time, Jon Stewart, who of course left The Daily Show and is doing his own show, The Trouble with Jon Stewart, starring Jon Stewart, is one of the great minds of our time from a comedic standpoint. And he was on last night with his friend, Stephen Colbert. Of course, they worked together on The Daily Show. And Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert addressed the issues of the day, particularly about anti-Semitism with regard to Kanye West and Kyrie Irving. And it was about a 12-minute, 15-minute segment. And I'd like to play it all for you guys, but I don't want to get in trouble with the folks at CBS. I don't want to get in trouble with the folks here at Bonneville. I think it's worthy. I think it's comedic and entertaining, but informative. First and foremost, it really brings to light the situation we find ourselves in and an effort to find a solution to the situation we find ourselves in. So what I'll try to do, and Matt did a great job today separating some of these little elements of the story into various chunks, and I hope they'll help us tell you the story of last night's interaction between Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and with regard to the moment in our nation's culture with regard to anti-Semitism. So we'll start with this one. And bear with me because the monkey's running the board right here, folks. It's me. It's not Matt. If you hear technical difficulties, don't blame Matt or Tony. It's Spike O'Neill.
So lastly, it was after there was a Kanye situation, then obviously the Kyrie situation. And after the Kyrie situation, Kyrie Irving, on Twitter was trending the Jews. It was just the words the Jews trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so it was bittersweet. Because it's always nice to trend on Twitter. I mean, that.
It's never bad.
I knew that if I checked it, it wasn't going to be like, the Jews bought everyone ice cream. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be.
Yes. The Jews, ABC's new hit sitcom.
That's right. But because it was Kyrie and it was about the Nets, the Jews was trending under sports, which for us.
That's a win.
Never happened before.
Yeah. Sandy Koufax and then this.
Sandy Koufax, then it was like 50 years, and then this trended. It's, look, I'm, you know, as our spokes Jew, and we hear you, the people out there, and we know, you know, the power and control that the Jews have collectively, because that's how we wield it.
Sure. It's all unanimous decision.
Correct. I'm not on all the committees, and I don't know who ended Kanye's Adidas deal. That wasn't my committee. I'm on oil prices and bagel flavors. I do bagel flavors. By the way, and I say this to all you out there who enjoy bagels, Blueberry was a rogue committee. That was not us. I don't know where that came from.
So you get, I hope you get, it's hard to do this without having the entire breadth of their interview run, because you kind of get what he's talking about. Obviously, John Stewart was pointing out the lunacy of the there and the trope that the people of Jewish persuasion have some cabal that runs everything on the planet. And far too often that is the slur made against Jews. You know, and I'll keep going because, Matt, you did a great job on this. So I'm going to keep playing these.
No, but in all seriousness, penalizing somebody for having a thought, I don't think is the way to change their minds or gain understanding. This is a grown-ass man. And the idea that you would say to him, we're going to put you in a timeout.
Speaking of Kyrie Irving. Oh, I can't stop and restart it? Okay.
You have to sit in the corner and stare at the wall until you no longer believe that the Jews control the international banking system. We have to get past this in the country, the ability to, look, people think this. People think Jews control Hollywood. People think Jews control the banks. And to pretend that they don't and to not deal with it in a straightforward manner, we will never gain any kind of understanding with each other.
And I think that's a pretty profound view on things. You know, just punishing people for what they say. And people say horrible things and they should be punished for them. But by just, you know, like he said, putting somebody on timeout from the NBA, Kyrie Irving, until he comes around and sees the error of his ways, it doesn't really solve the problem. Conversations solve the problem. Having discussions about the issues solves the problem. He goes on.
Now, everybody obviously calls me and says, like, did you see Dave on SNL? And I'm like, yes, we're very good friends. I always watch and send nice texts. He normalized anti-Semitism with the monologue. And I'm like, I don't know if you've been on comment sections on most news articles, but it's pretty normal. Like, anti-Semitism, I mean, as you know, it's incredibly normal. But the one thing I will say is, I don't believe that censorship and penalties are the way to end anti-Semitism or to not gain understanding. I don't believe in that. And I think it's the wrong way for us to approach it. Kyrie Irving, they suspended him from playing basketball. If you want to punish this man, send him to the Knicks.
Comedy, folks. It works. We'll keep going.
But it is my sincere hope that in my lifetime, I do get to see a Christian president. I hope that.
This is his response to the fact that the Jews control everything. They are in charge of every decision. That's how lunacy.
I hope that I think America's ready for it. To see a president stand up and swear in, maybe on, and I say this with no regret, on a Bible. Jews have controlled it for too long. And so it would be our honor to allow you 1 4-year term. Just
you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's humor is how you're going to cut through. It's always kind of been that way. Some of the most, you play George Carlin. What a perfect example of a comedian, a humorist, being able to reach people and have them see a new point of view, having them laugh about the absurdity of a situation when the root of that situation was an argument they were just making, and seeing how ridiculous it is through humor. It's incredibly valuable. Let's play some more.
Comedy is reductive. We play with tropes because everyone has prejudice in their lives and in the way that they view things. Comics rely on those prejudices as a shorthand for our material. Even the wokest of comics plays with tropes to a certain extent. But my point is, the most interesting thing to come out of this, in my mind, was something Kanye said on his tour that he was doing after he said that, and then he got interviewed by five, you know, different people because the media model is arson and conflict. He said something fascinating in my mind. He said, hurt people hurt people. And if the point of all this is then to heal people, the only way to heal a wound is to open it up and cleanse it. And that stings. That hurts. But you have to expose it to air. And I'm afraid that the general tenor of conversation in this country is cover it up, bury it, put it to the outskirts, and don't deal with it. And what I would say is, you know, look at it from a black perspective, a culture that feels that its wealth has been extracted by different groups, whites, Jews, things. Whether it's true or not isn't the issue. That's the feeling in that community. And if you don't understand that that's where it's coming from, then you can't deal with it. And you can't sit down with them and explain that being in an industry isn't the same as having a nefarious and controlling interest in that industry and intention, right? And that's been the anti-Semitic trope. But you need to be able to meet people from what their community is feeling as well.
You know, there are moments like this, I think, and this, again, this is Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. This is my opinion. This is my show, along with Matt. And I appreciate Matt putting you all this putting together. I appreciate you doing this so we can share with the audience. You know, he's bringing to the forefront difficult conversations about sensitive issues that a lot of people are either suffering through, victimized by, or I'm afraid still putting out into the sphere. You know, people are still speaking these tropes, these anti-Semitic tropes. The way Kyrie Irving got into trouble was tweeting out a link to a film that was overtly anti-Semitic. You know, and you can text us what you think about this topic and these clips from Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert last night. I'd love to hear your point of view, but I think clearly no one's going to come out and stand up for anti-Semitism. You know, no one's going to come up and stand up for racism or bigotry in any capacity, but we all have these.
Have you read the internet lately?
You know what? There are dark places with people thinking dark things. And we talked earlier about how, you know, we have these. You said, how can we have to keep putting this down? How can we have to keep stomping out these little fires? How can people still feel this way? People are born with their prejudices. I am born with my prejudices, my preconceptions, my bigotries. From who we are, how we were raised, where we were raised, our parents, everything, the communities we lived in. And we have these beliefs. And a lot of times they're dark and they're insidious. And you're right, Matt, I see them all the time. But to Jon Stewart's point, you know, I think he's given us a way to find a way through this to the other side. And I'll play one final clip. And this kind of wrapped up their segment last night.
Dave said something in the SNL monologue that I thought was instructive as well, which he says it shouldn't be this hard to talk about things. I can't pretend that there aren't a ton of people in this country and this world who believe that the Jews have an unreasonable amount of control over the systems and they wield it as puppet masters. I'm called anti-Semitic because I'm against Israel's treatment of Palestinians. I'm called other things from other people based on other opinions that I have. But those shut down debate. They're used as a cudgel. And whether it be comedy or discussion or anything else, if we don't have the wherewithal to meet each other with what's reality, then how do we move forward is my question. I don't enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. You know, when people I admire, whose music I like or things like that, come out and say, how many of you are in show? But, you know, here's the deal. We have our own tropes, like a white person's success is because of privilege. A minority's success is empowerment. A Jew's success, that's a conspiracy. You feel that. I feel that. But I have to be able to express that to people. If I can't say that's bull and explain why, then where do we go? And if we all just shut it down, then we retreat to our little corners of misinformation and it metastasizes. And the whole point of all this is to not let it metastasize and to get it out in the air and talk about it.
Amen. And there's a lot of people in the text line. You think that agree with what John's saying. I'll take just one text out of 100 so far. Have you guys heard the anti-Semitism from the squad? And you know what? I don't see anybody condemning her. I would beg to differ that Ilhan Omar of the United States House Representative was condemned and criticized by those on the right as being anti-Semitic for the comments she made. And much like Jon Stewart, she was saying she disagreed with the Israelis' treatment of Palestinians. That's exactly the same thing that Jon Stewart just said. And she was deemed anti-Semitic by our texter. And I'm not saying you're right and I'm wrong. I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. I'm not saying that at all. We're all called different things for different reasons. We're accused of different things for different reasons. We bring different prejudices and bigotries to our lives and our opinions.
But that's the struggle I have with Stewart's comments. As much as I love them, just sitting down and dialoguing with people who have, say, neo-Nazi beliefs, that's not going to convert them in most cases. Now, sometimes there is the exception. There was the guy who, the African-American gentleman that converted several white supremacists.
Right,
remember that
story? Right, sure, sure.
But by and large, like, where do you draw the line between, okay, I'm going to try to understand where this person comes from, and the line of this is bad and needs to stop and we can't tolerate intolerance. It's a paradox.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But, you know, sunlight. Somebody else wrote, sunlight is the best disinfectant. We're not, if we're sitting down and talking with them, it may not change their point of view, but we can't just let it squirrel away in the dark and not address it. Right. When we talked earlier about it, you said, how do these things keep popping up? Because people of like minds get together and reinforce each other's beliefs, reaffirm each other's prejudices. And then there's safety in numbers. And they feel empowered to come out and make these statements or even take these actions, sometimes violent actions against groups they are prejudiced against. And it happens on so many fronts. Someone says you're not born with prejudice. It's learned behavior. And I think that's what I was trying to say. That you're not born with prejudice. You can take a baby and put in whatever environment you put them in, they're not going to grow up to have a prejudice belief unless it's something they learn along the way. Environment, I think, has more to do with prejudice than biology. I hope that's point. Someone says, and your point is that these conversations are worth having, necessary even to have. Transparency, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Transparency. It's Cairo Nights. Thank you. So many great texts tonight. We've got a few more, a couple more breaks to do. I just wanted to get that out last night because I thought it was important to see. If you are inclined, you can find that, I'm sure, on the Late Show with Stephen Colbert's Facebook page, YouTube channel. It was Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. Also would recommend that everybody go watch Kanye West, excuse me, Dave Chappelle's Saturday Night Live monologue. It was great comedy and social commentary. The likes of which we don't get to see very often anymore. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. I don't know. It's Stump Spike Night. They're doing great, by the way. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, along with Matt Butler. And Tony's on the board. Lisa and I both were like, huh?
Stumble and I fall. Your time is on my side. Don't make sense of it all.
It's not Tom Waits, is it?
Despite my foolish pride.
Is this the new Harry Styles? Sorry, old joke.
It is the voice of the late, great heart. Mark Lanegan.
Oh.
In a duet with Isabel Campbell called Come Undone.
Wow.
What
was this on Halloween? This is great. By the way, Lisa, thank you for the news about Mariah Carey's attempt to
no Queen of Christmas
run roughshod over my Christmas. No, thank you, Mariah Carey. And to be fair, I do love Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. It's a great Christmas song. It's a classic Christmas song, one of the most successful of all time. I think it actually beat out White Christmas as the most sold, played, downloaded Christmas song of all time. Which was the onus behind her attempt to own Queen of Christmas.
Well, Bing Crosby fans have kind of aged out of the holiday market.
They have. It said a couple of the artists had competed with her for the title of, or had objected to her. Yes. Do we know who they were?
No,
which,
I don't.
I think Dolly Parton was one. Or someone was arguing on Dolly Parton's behalf. Hard Candy Christmas is still, okay. You know, as far as Queen of Christmas. How assumptive of Mariah Carey. to think she should and could be queen of Christmas.
Yeah, that was probably something her record label wanted
to do. Well, it's obviously a marketing ploy they thought they could make some money on. QOC, yeah. Whatever.
She could be queen of cute.
She could be, yeah, queen of contrived. That would be good. And that's, like I said, I love the song. You know, Mariah Carey's fine. She's great. She's got a phenomenal voice. She's had an incredible career. But Christmas means so many different things to so many different people. Yeah. There's no queen of Christmas. I loved your story, though. Thank you. And thanks to you guys for not coming back with Mariah. I was sure I was going to get clubbed over the head with All I Want for Christmas Is You. It's not time yet. Remember, when you play Christmas music before Thanksgiving, an elf kills a baby reindeer. And we won't be responsible for that kind of heresy. We won't. We just won't. Our segment last break about Jon Stewart and his take on anti-Semitism and comedy's ability and role in public debate, I think was fantastic. I appreciate, Matt, all the work you did cutting that up into segments we could actually use and get us past legal in getting that on the air. Appreciated it. And the texters who spoke out with opposing viewpoints and agreeing with our viewpoints, we appreciate you guys too. This is what I'm talking about, us being able to have conversations about difficult issues and share opposing viewpoints civilly. You know, it's good that we're all passionate about this. It's good that it matters to us how we move forward as a nation, whether, you know, from perspective of what we teach our kids, how we make our laws, who we select to lead our country. It matters. And our opinions are valuable. Yours, mine, Matt's, everybody's. Tony's too. Tony's too. You matter too, buddy.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. I mentioned, you know, that I have prejudices in my life. I have bigotry in my life. And was it taught to me by my parents? Absolutely. My parents weren't evil people. My parents didn't tell me that that African Americans are bad people and that, you know, whites were superior. My parents would never say something. Your parents wouldn't say something like that. My parents didn't say something like that. I grew up in Baltimore in the 60s. I was a kid I was coming of school age in the late 60s in Baltimore, Maryland, one of the most racially divided cities in America. And there were neighborhoods just adjacent to my all-white neighborhood that was an all-black neighborhood. And my parents told me out of love and concern, you know, when you guys play, and in those days you went and played for hours. You'd leave the house in the morning and come back when the streetlights came on in the summertime, right? You know, make sure you check in. There were no phones. Make sure you check in somewhere. Make sure you let somebody know where you are. You know, if you're going out with Timmy and Johnny Ford and whomever else or Danny and Eddie Bolger, whoever it was, you know, you let somebody know where you are. If you stop somewhere for dinner, you know, have their parents give us a call. Blah, blah, blah. It was a good time to grow up. But it was also a time where I didn't go into the next neighborhood over Claremont. I didn't go into that neighborhood because of the times we lived in and the riots that were going on in Baltimore. You just didn't do it. Now, my parents weren't telling me that because they didn't think, they thought less of African Americans. They were telling me that because they wanted me to be safe, and in their own prejudiced and bigoted way, that's how they thought they could keep me safe. And yes, I brought those prejudices and bigotry with me throughout my life. It took me a long time to realize that people were the same no matter what color they were. You know, and I was talking to G. Scott during the show. I was sat in with G and Ursula yesterday for Ursula. And G made a confession that the first time he met white people was during sports. And I admitted the same thing. The first time I made African-American friends. The first time I understood who people were, you know, how they were raised and what their values and character were had nothing to do with the color of their skin. It was the environment they came from. So when I say I'm born with prejudices and bigotry deep down in my being, yeah. And I hopefully have learned to overcome those through life, through experience, through trial and error, by making mistakes, by judging people wrongly, unjustly, and learning the hard way that I was wrong. And I think we all can do that, right? You know, so your parents were prejudiced? Like, yeah, I guess, in hindsight. I don't think they were intentionally prejudiced. I'll go to my grave arguing that they weren't. They were the product of their environments. We came from an America that was not where we are today. Everybody talks about how dangerous it is today, how bad it is today, how divided we are today. Our parents grew up in America that was much worse, much more racially divided, much more. You know, I mean, my grandparents grew up in an America where separate but equal was the rule, where Jim Crow was the rule, pre-civil rights era, when people didn't have the liberties we have as white Americans and take for granted. That's the America my grandparents and my parents grew up in. I grew up just at the back end of that era. Like I said, I'm the last baby boomer. I was born in 1963. Officially, baby boomers end in 64. And I grew up, you know, in an America that always had civil rights, that always had the Voting Rights Act. That's the America I grew up in. And sometimes we take it for granted. I guarantee most of you out there are younger than me or the same age as me. Most of you. Most of you are probably younger. And, you know, when the Supreme Court says that America is no longer prejudiced and we don't need the protections of the Voting Rights Act, I think that's ridiculous and wrong and irresponsible. I really do. Because clearly we see evidence every day. America is still a racially divided country. For the most part, we get along. For the most part, we've learned and evolved. For the most part. I know sometimes evidence points to the contrary, and it's hard to believe that some days. Sometimes, Matt, you got to remember that sometimes just because they're the loudest voice in the room doesn't mean they're speaking for the majority. And I think that can be borne out to be true across so many different situations.
Yes, but a vile and violent minority can cause huge problems for peaceful people. The seething and the bubbling under and the things, the dark things that you see on the internet, those people can do immeasurable damage to innocent people.
Agreed. A texter says, you want to learn about interracial relations? Go to military boot camp. Amen. I couldn't agree with you more. Wasn't that long ago, though, you didn't have desegregated boot camps. I believe it was President Eisenhower that desegregated the military. So, again, we're not talking about hundreds of years ago. We're talking about two generations ago. We live in a better America than the majority of those who came before us. Matt, I'm taking you out for a beer after this. Because Matt has been working diligently, not only to keep the show moving forward, to keep Tony in a learning vibe. This is a great song, by the way. And this is a perfect song for where we are right now in this conversation and this show. And I know we kind of rolled out of the time frame of this, but you can keep it, hit it again because it works. Who can say where Jesus will be on the side of? Who can say? Matt says, I can.
Not a Russian thug who has journalists murdered. I can guarantee you that.
I pretty much would agree. I pretty much would agree. Jesus, a nice little brown man from the Middle East. Who knows what he would say about today's world? At least that's what I've heard. I never had a picture at my house. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Dude, I don't know where you get off playing this REO Speedwagon. I don't know what things gives you the power. I'm kidding. Tony, I'm kidding, buddy. ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Cairo Nights, the soothing sound of Cairo Nights. This ain't the first REO swamp ballad you played tonight, though, my friend. Play some good old REO Speedwagon. You're going to play some REO Speedwagon. Play some, Roll with the Changes. You know, was it 461 Riverside Avenue, I think it was?
You know what I like that you never hear on the radio anymore is Riding the Storm Out.
Riding the Storm Out was a great
tune. That was in the movie FM.
Oh, Gary Richrath, lead guitar of REO Speedwagon. Oh, my God. The late, great Gary Richrath, I should say.
Good song.
And a texter wanted to know what we went left with last break, talking about the 75-year-old 104-mile-an-hour 40-mile chase granny. That, of course, was a title track from Bad Outta Hell.
Another one of Tony's good picks.
Nice call, my friend. Oh, what a record, Bad Outta Hell. Let's talk about a man who clearly needs our help. And, you know, this time of year, you can It's always good, I think, to be charitable and give donations where needed. I would always recommend, though, that you, when you decide to give to charity, if you can give to charity, use an organization called Charity Navigator. They are a service that rates charities as per how much of your donation actually goes to the cause that they're promoting. You know, and I don't mean to pick on any particular organization, but some of the most well-known and well-supported charitable organizations, very little actually makes it into the field to do the work that is intended by your donation. We did a lot of work with World Vision over the years, and I don't know how they managed to do it, but out of every dollar given to World Vision, $1.14 goes into the field, because they, and Charity Navigator will back me up on this. And I think those numbers may have changed in the last couple of years. I haven't really looked at the number in the last couple of years, but I know how the organization thinks and works. They keep their administration costs low. They use corporate matching funds, so that every dollar given to them by public donation, more than a dollar, goes into the field to do the work intended by your donation. The gentleman I think we ought to help tonight is a man who's accomplished great things, but has fallen on, I don't know, these have to be difficult times. Of course, I'm speaking of Nick Cannon, who just announced that he's awaiting baby number 12.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And I don't know how many... I joke, but Nick Cannon, who is a TV host. I think that's his trait now, right?
He's an entertainer. He's also done morning radio in New York and L.A.
Yeah, I mean, he's a smart, savvy gentleman. He's obviously got game. He's got his 12th coming, you know? So won't you send your...
Catch up, Elon.
Send your extra unused condoms now to... Keep Nick at home. Well, no. Keep Nick out of here. I don't know how you 12 kids? Is it four different moms? And I'm not passing judgment. Good on you. But
it's just a fascinating study in human behavior that this is even a thing.
And it's
the insane amount of money that he pays annually in child support.
Well,
too.
And it's not just child support. It's you know, providing for these kids, not just like, it's not like he's cutting checks to not have to be part of these kids' lives. I'm not sure how many of these kids he's involved. Maybe all 11, maybe 12 too. Who knows?
From all reports, he's a very involved parent as best he can.
And I didn't mean to imply anything otherwise. I'm not going to make a he's no Herschel Walker joke, but you know, he's clearly, this guy's got it going on. The fact that he's announcing his 12th is on the way, and not some undercover reporter in Georgia is announcing that his 12th is on the way. And like Matt said, he spends $3 million a year annually. Maybe that's why he's hosting every show in the world.
Well, I was going to say, because this works well apparently for now for him, but what happens if his income goes south? If his star fades, he is in a world of hurt.
How do you keep up?
And I'm no math whiz, but how much is that per kid?
12 kids, 3 million. That's a third of a million per kid. That's 333 million per kid, or 330,000 per year per kid. I'm fast with math.
Very good.
I was a bartender. And we won't even get it. We don't have time to get into the names that that Nick Cannon and his various ex-wives, lovers, mothers. I don't want to say baby mamas. I think that's a derogatory term. I wouldn't classify any mother as that when they have a willing partner. You start me up. This should be Nick Cannon's intro song every night of his life, no matter what job he's working. His latest newborn will be Zeppelin Cannon.
Zeppelin.
Yeah. The names of the babies, they're scattered throughout the story. I think I heard Sherry rattle them off the other day.
Well, you'll never forget his kid's name with a name like that.
Well, you know, the twins that he had with Mariah Carey, they are a Moroccan and Monroe. His son, Golden Sagan, in 2017. Daughter, Powerful Queen. Son, Rise Messiah. You know, I mean, gosh, Zillin and Zion, the twins, with the fourth lady involved, his other son, Zen. I mean, it sounds like the lineup for the new Buicks for 2023.
His Thanksgiving dinners must be off the hook.
Oh, you think? He's got a son, Legendary. So, I mean, Onyx, Legendary, Zen, Zion, Zillin. It sounds like the new lineup from Buick. You know, Sagan, powerful queen.
Imagine doing all that Christmas shopping, too.
You think Nick Cannon goes out and shops?
I think he probably does.
He probably does. Think
he probably enjoys it.
You think he just goes to Amazon and goes, yep.
Gift card. Yep.
No, I mean basket. Amazon delivery trucks are probably roaming California right now just at solely to service Nick Cannon's daddy needs. Good on you, Nick Cannon. Congratulations, oh, fertile one.
Keeping those drivers busy.
Oh, fertile Nick Cannon. And I hadn't even contemplated how the name Cannon resonates with this man.
So many layers to this.
I don't know how many people have caught on to that yet. But Tony, picture theme song for the rest of your life, Nick Cannon. And every time I hear this song, Tony, I'll think of Nick Cannon fathering another child. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back.